Welcome to everyone who's joined us today. This is really exciting for us. It's the first seminar in this open education course. The number of panelists in this seminar today, Mark Surman is the director of the Mozilla Foundation. Frank Hecker heads up the open education work of the foundation. Aras Bissell is here from CC Learn, the education part of Creative Commons, and I'm facilitating the, so I'm based at the University of the Western Cape in South Africa. What we're going to do today is just have a really brief welcome from me, then I'll hand over to Mark, who's going to start with a very high-level view of open education and explain how why openness in education is important, some of the changes we're seeing in the education landscape today, and how that connects to the kinds of things that we're going to be talking about in this course. Frank and Aras are going to link the course into the things that are happening at Mozilla Education and at CC Learn. And then I'm going to take over again to speak about the logistics of the course, the things we're going to do throughout the next 6 weeks, who's going to come speak with us, and how does the blueprinting work. So this is me. You can see a little picture. You'll see pictures of the other guys. The course is a cooperation between Mozilla and Creative Commons. As I said, Frank and Aras are going to link the things we're doing here to the what the organizations are doing. And these are the four people that are here with me today. Mark, as you can see. Okay, whoever is playing around with my presentation, please. Mark dialing in on his 1984 mobile phone. Frank and Aras is on the right here. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Mark, who's going to take us on a little tour through open education and some of those amazing changes that are taking place right now and that have to do with the three things we're talking about in this course.
Hi, and welcome, folks, and glad to be here. When Philip was saying it's pages, I didn't see them changing. So I don't know, are people now seeing the contact page that has my face on it? Just if people can hit yes if it or no. Yes, okay, good. So I'm going to keep going. So as Phil said, I want to just set a little bit of the tone for this seminar. And I'm a kind of a guy who likes interactive face-to-face meetings, so it's a little bit weird just to be talking at you with these slides. I may ask questions as we go just to kind of get some interactivity going. The goal of this overall course, as I think you know, but I just want to kind of set it, is to help people who are educators learn open content, technology, and pedagogical skills that they can use in their teaching. So this is Mozilla and CC really wanting to take those three building blocks and help people get some ways that they can use those in their teaching as we care about that. And I guess, you know, the question you may ask is, you know, why? Why do we want to do that? Why do we care about that? There's some specific organizational reasons we'll get into in a second, but I think at a big societal level, it is that, you know, students are living in a world of a web. And I hope people got a chance to look at the Vision of Students Online video. It's just amazing. Actually, many people could just put up their hand if they did see that video. Okay, not that many people are putting up their hands, so I would say go and watch that video, which Philip linked to if you didn't watch it. And really, you know, the point of that video is to talk about how students live and learn on the web in a way that means that traditional education just isn't working. And maybe you think that traditional education wasn't working before, and you know, means that you know, we want more interactivity and more kind of students in the driver's seat anyway, but that. The web has really made that even more clear. And so, you know, as people who are educators, I think what we need to do is we're to teach like the web. And I think one of the wonderful things that you know, both Mozilla and CC believe in is that we can learn a lot from the culture of the web in all kinds of areas, like education, like government, and kind of use the collaborative and participatory nature of the web as something that, that we can use to innovate all sorts of things. Society, education is a really important one. So the building blocks that we think in terms of what it means to teach like the web are to look at sort of how you apply the idea of kind of openness, participation, those kinds of things to three areas of education. One is the content, the material we use in education. One is the technology we use, you know, whether we're teaching face-to-face or teaching an environment like this. And the third is in kind of actually how we teach. And, you know, these are the kind of three building blocks that we'll actually look at in the course. And they're also the building blocks that, when a bunch of people came together about a year and a half ago to do something called the Cape Town Declaration on Open Education, which sort of were the consensus on the three areas where the most immediate opportunity for innovation in terms of open education. So sort of why we focus on them. And this whole kind of topic of open education, if you just look at it at 10,000 feet, has become huge. A lot of it has started with that first building block of content. There's, you know, things like the MIT Open Courseware and Wikipedia that are really about getting the materials that professors or teachers use out there in a way that people can remix and share. But that's really only a part of the picture. And you're starting to see things like the Utah Open High School or Zillow at Seneca program, both I think we'll have people we can talk to over the course of this course, going into those other areas. What is it about the kind of open technology that is a part of the picture, and what does open pedagogy look like? And, you know, really all three, I think, need to come together in order to kind of look at how open education can work. And once you've got all three of them, you know, you could have an environment where it's not only about sharing of information, but also it is about collaborating. And ultimately, it's about, you know, not just professors, but students remixing and making the materials of learning. That's really a lot of what we're talking about. And that's something that can obviously apply both a formal and formal. So just to, you know, to finish off my introduction in a few seconds, is we're saying, you know, why specifically do Mozilla and Creative Commons care? Why are we doing this course? And one is that certainly we have a broader mission. We know that Mozilla is Firefox and we do software that makes it that open, and Creative Commons of licensing the content model that makes for open content on the web. But both of us also have, a broader mission to promote openness and participation as a core part of our digital lives. And education is really critical about it. If we want a digital society where openness and participation and distributed decision-making are central, we need to look at how we actually organize learning, which is a big function of our society that shapes who we all are and how we all act, and having openness and participation built in from the beginning. So that's one of the reasons we care. I think the other is, at least especially for the Mozilla side, this is also an experiment. We want to jump into education for the reason I just talked about in the last slide, and you can learn kind of talk about education. But we don't really know how to do it. It's not something that Mozilla has done necessarily in the past. Certainly, we believe that open source software development is itself a learning process, and so in that way, Mozilla's been in the education business for 10 years. People come in with technical skills and their library. But in terms of going further, we don't know how to do it yet. So this webinar is a part of that experiment. What we're trying to get out of that experiment is learning how we can share our skills, learning how we can bring new ideas into the Mozilla community. So, you know, that's why these blueprint projects are so exciting, is we really want to engage with all of you as people who can help define how CC and how Mozilla can talk about and work on education and use you guys as a new energy and idea source. So we want to figure out how we can do that and see whether people have ideas they can contribute. And of course, you know, we want to find more allies in the process. People believe that teaching like the web is something that's important and who can help us define and what that is. And of course, we also want to have time. So that's what we're hoping to get out of it. It'd be interesting to hear if we have a chat working, what other people are hoping to get out of this. Maybe that's something that can start as a thread in the news group. Because certainly I'd love to know where our goals really align with why other people are here, and also what other people are hoping to get out of this process. So I think that's it for me, unless people have questions. Okay. So I'm going to pass the mic back to Philip, who's hosting.
Thanks, Mark. I suggest that people who have comments or questions, just post them as questions. It doesn't look like we're unable to unlock the chat for this session, unfortunately, because it was locked by the previous users. But we will definitely have that chat working for the next one. So for now, if you post questions, I will just send an answer to every question that comes in so that everyone can see what people are saying. So if you have comments or also if you continue having audio problems, then please post questions into the question and answer field, and I'll do my best to keep that conversation going. I'm also wondering if others had the problem with the speed, that my audio was cutting out a little bit occasionally, so I'm going to be speaking more slowly, and I would maybe Frank and Aras can also slow down a little bit so the audio problems for everyone will go away. And I'll hand over to Frank now, who's going to tell us a little more about the Mozilla education work and how that relates to the things we're talking about in this course.
Okay, I'm here. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm going to talk about Mozilla Education, which is a new program that we're doing at Mozilla this year, specifically out of the Mozilla Foundation. I can sum up Mozilla Education very simply. It's essentially open education, all of the things that Mark talked about, only done in a Mozilla context. We're certainly working with other people who are interested in the larger world of open education, and in fact, that's one reason why we're doing this seminar. In the end, our goal is to advance the goals of the Mozilla project, and so our primary interest in education is Mozilla education. And in particular, these are the goals that we have. The first thing is that we want to teach more people about Mozilla. And by that, we mean both the Mozilla technologies and also the practices that we use within the Mozilla project. The open source based participatory way that people participate in Mozilla. So as I said, we want to teach people about Mozilla, both the technologies that we use to build Firefox and other products, and how to do things like build Firefox extensions and other things on top of Mozilla technologies, as well as how we do things within the Mozilla project. Now, I'll talk more about that in the next slide. One of the primary reasons we want to teach people about Mozilla, besides the fact that we think it's a great thing, is that we want to bring new people into the Mozilla community. As an open source project, our growth and vitality over time is dependent upon the number and the quality of people that we can attract to work on Mozilla. So that's our second goal is that we want to bring a new generation of people into the Mozilla project, especially as a lot of people within the Mozilla project are getting older and at some points their participation will fall off. And then finally, we have a larger goal, and this is part of the overall open education movement. We want to bring the lessons of open source development to education and promote education that's not simply a teacher-led, lecture-oriented way of learning, but a more participatory way of learning in which students can assume a leadership role in various contexts in addition to instructors. And that's certainly the case within the Mozilla project. People in the Mozilla project learn from each other, in effect. As part of the Mozilla project, we want to build a global community of people who are interested both in Mozilla and education. Our starting point for that is work that's been done at Seneca College in Toronto, Canada, over the past few years. They built a sort of mini Mozilla curriculum within their overall curriculum to teach students how to work within the Mozilla project, how to work with Mozilla technologies, how to develop new functionality in Mozilla, and so on. They're essentially using Mozilla as a way to teach computer science and software development to their students, as opposed to working with small example projects or working with proprietary software in terms of developing proprietary add-ons. And traditionally that work has just been at Seneca, but what we're doing now is we're opening up those Mozilla-related activities at Seneca so that anyone in the world can participate. And we're inviting faculty and students who want to incorporate Mozilla related topics into their courses, we're inviting them to work with us and try to do that. And there are various aspects of that. One aspect of that is creating a site called education.mozilla.org, which is essentially going to be our repository for the materials we create and the other instruction-related content that we working with in the Mozilla context. We also want to not just provide open content to people, we also want to bring students and faculty into the broader Mozilla community. Dave Humphrey of Seneca is the person that's leading our overall effort in these areas. And one of Dave's primary principles is that people learn things best if they participate directly in the communities that are working with the things in question. So if you want to learn about Mozilla and you want to introduce your students to Mozilla, then our belief is that the best way to do that is to become a member of the Mozilla community yourself, as opposed to just standing off on the side and reading materials and doing presentations. So that's a major part of our goal. If you're interested in getting involved in Mozilla education, we have a number of communications channels that you can use. First, and I think most important, is we have a very active IRC channel, Talent Education, on the irc.mozilla.org server. So if you're familiar with IRC, which is essentially a text-based chat facility originally built on top of Unix systems. If you're familiar with IRC and you have an IRC client, you can go to the irc.mozilla.org server and join the Pound Education channel, and that will get you in touch with a lot of people who are working in this area with Mozilla. And we also have a mailing list, which also gateway to the news group. And then finally, I mentioned earlier, Dave Humphrey of Seneca is leading a lot of these efforts, and Dave is welcome to hear from you, or he's eager to hear from you anytime you have questions. One of the things we'd like to talk about with you as part of this seminar, in fact, is if there are particular things we could be doing to help you from a Mozilla perspective and from other perspectives, and also if there are suggestions you have for us. So, for example, I mentioned earlier we're starting up an education.mozilla.org repository or central site for our education-related efforts, and we're eager to hear some thoughts from people as to how to make that a robust and useful resource as opposed to simply being a page of links to material that's posted elsewhere. So, if you're interested in helping us with that, we'd be glad to hear from you, whether you want to do it as part of this seminar, as one of your blueprints, or whether you want to do it in another context, and we're happy to hear from you. And that's basically all I have to say on Mozilla education, unless people have questions. Yeah, somebody asked a question about the Mozilla curriculum. If you go to education.mozilla.org, that website, there are links to all the current Mozilla-related education things we know about. And so you can find links to Seneca and what they're doing there, and as well as other material. Okay. That's all I have for now. So let me turn it back to whoever's next, but I guess it's Arak.
Frank, there's one more question. Just wanted to say there's a question from Alex Tarkovsky here about a FLOSS project or a comment, and there was an earlier question about what is a Mozilla educator, which I tried to answer, but I think it would be good if you could quickly give some answers to those questions.
Okay, I'll talk about the second one first. From our perspective, a Mozilla educator is really anyone who wants to introduce Mozilla-related technologies and related material into their coursework. Most of the interest we've had so far has been from faculty in higher education, universities and colleges, that are interested in having their students work on Mozilla-related projects as an example of real-life software development. So, for example, we've had students that have done things like implement extensions to Firefox, or even in some cases made changes to the core Mozilla code to implement particular enhanced features for that code. That's the typical thing. And in fact, we have an effort on right now to identify tasks within the Mozilla project that would make suitable student projects. Things that are substantial enough and interesting enough that a student would want to work on them, but are bounded enough that a student could work on it over the course of one or two semesters. It was kind of a multi-year project. So that's one major activity we have going on right now. And if you're interested in that, contact Dave Humphrey and Dave can tell you more about it. The other question from Al Tarkovsky was more of a statement than a question, but I'll respond to what I think he's asking. And that's, he mentioned that FLOSS projects or open source free software projects need more of a one-on-one mentor-student model, especially for people who aren't technically inclined already. That's a very good point. And in fact, part of our goal is to introduce people to the Mozilla project, and that means and make them part of a community. That means not just having them contribute to the community, but also having people who are already in the community help them out. So, for example, one of the things we do, and we use the Pound Education Channel as a central point to talk to people about this. One of the things we try to do is to recruit people in the Mozilla community already who would be willing to act as mentors to students and get them involved with particular student projects. So the role that Dave has, for example, is to try to make those introductions, to talk to faculty and talk to students and figure out who within the Mozilla community would be a good person for them to talk to, and then make the necessary introductions and try to get people connected. So that's one of our goals. And we definitely do not want to have people just sort of standing apart from the project and looking at it from outside. We want people involved in the project and willing to help them become involved in whatever way we can. There's a question from Melanie about making Firefox add-ons. Says, will those of us lacking development technology be able to have the opportunity to make your own Firefox add-on? I don't know if you're referring to within this particular course or in general, but in general, the skills you need to make a Firefox add-on are basically knowledge of JavaScript and knowledge of HTML and related web technologies. You don't need to be a expert C programmer or C++ programmer in order to be able to create a Firefox add-on. And there's a lot of material on the Mozilla Developer Center site about how to develop extensions. And we have, we've had workshops. We just had one in Berlin, for example, about people who are interested in developing add-ons. However, if you're just starting out, there are perhaps better ways to try to work with Firefox to make enhancements to it. For example, we've just introduced this idea called personas, P-E-R-S-O-N-A-S. Personas are essentially ways to customize the appearance of Firefox to make it look like different things. And the nice thing about personas is they're relatively easy to create. And if you're just getting into Mozilla development, you might want to look at trying to create a simple persona just to get a feel for working with Firefox and some of the things you can do to customize it. And then I would go on from there to looking at the material we have on extensions. There's a question about whether the opportunities for teachers at the lower levels, not just K-12, but K-A. I'll answer that from a Mozilla perspective. From a Mozilla perspective, our primary focus is on higher education because that's that's the people that have contacted us so far primarily, and that's the experience we have. We're also going to work with people at the secondary level, high school level. Throughout the Mozilla project, we've had a number of people that have come into the project as high school students. There may also be opportunity at the K-8 levels. It would be a question of what exactly you're interested in doing with Firefox and other Mozilla products, and we can figure out if there are projects that would be appropriate for those grade levels. But we're not ruling it out. Unless you have any other final questions here. I don't see anything else. So, Philip, I'll be glad to turn it back to you now.
But I'll just hand it over to Aras, who's going to speak about Creative Commons and CC Learn and how this course fits into all the exciting things they're doing.
So, hello, everybody. This is Arash Bissell from Creative Commons CC Learn. I will try to speak slowly. Like Mark, I'm generally in a position where I'm looking at people and there's a lot of give and take. So it's always a challenge doing these things over the internet. But then again, this is something we couldn't possibly have done even a few years ago. So in that sense, it's very exciting. I'm just going to really give a very brief overview of why CC Learn is embarking on this. For some people in our sort of participant list, they're probably wondering why it's actually taken this long for CC Learn to step into kind of a more explicit teaching learning role, whereas others may be just wondering what the heck we're doing. So just to tell people, if you don't know already, what our overarching mission is, it's to minimize or eliminate, I would say, the legal, technical, and social barriers to the sharing and reuse of educational materials. Now, that focus clearly transcends all grade levels, formal, informal learning, any kind of discipline, so on and so forth. So the perspective is unquestionably very sort of broad. And the core principle is this notion that we don't want to presuppose what the exact value of anything is at the point of creation. In other words, it's crucial that we think right from the get-go that we can bring our expertise to bear on something, whether that's a technology, whether that's content, whether that's a new pedagogy, and make it appropriate for our own context. But we have to ensure that others not only have the capacity to find that stuff, but then also have the capacity to adapt it and make it useful in whatever context they may need. And that's precisely the perspective we bring to the work that we're doing. So to go into that a little more deeply, our mission focuses on ways to improve the opportunities for and the quality of education for everyone. And that's basically manifesting itself in a number of different kind of tasks, or I guess just general sort of projects that we engage in. One clearly is we just teach people and spread the word about open educational resources, right? About the movement, about all the different people involved, about the general principles, about the specific tools and applications, whatever it is that we can do to help people embrace the potential that many of us see in what we're now broadly calling the open education movement. We also then, from that, as much as possible, just keep our ears open and hear the feedback and the concerns and the complaints and whatnot to solve problems. Right? We want to be able to actually, as I said, eliminate or minimize the barriers to the growth of open education. And that means looking at technology problems, and that's where, for example, working with organizations like Mozilla makes so much sense. We've built a Discover tool for open educational resources, which is going to be pushed out formally very soon. We're thinking about ways of supporting the community with information tools and so on. We're also trying to develop best practices, guidelines, and stuff like that. And then getting into, you know, our hands dirty and actually working directly with specific groups, whether that's science education at grade school level, whether that's lifelong learners trying to learn agriculture, it really doesn't matter. Exemplars of this sort of general principles is precisely the sort of thing I seek every day. And then build and diversify the community. The education traditionally has organized itself by subdividing into all these different camps based on grade level, based on discipline, based on the presumed level of formality of the instruction, right? Is this a state-sponsored, you know, brick-and-mortar school? Is this homeschooling, et cetera? Open education transcends a lot of those boundaries. It's not that boundaries aren't useful, but that they should be permeable. We should not see that things are restricted to just one specific subset or another. And then all of this basically drives us towards what I would consider better pedagogical models. There's a deep history in education of demonstrating better ways of engaging students, of deepening the quality of the learning, of improving retention, essentially making all of the learning much more relevant and engaging to the people who are involved. And we can think of that as being learning is not something that just happens in a very delimited way, for example, just in school. Learning ideally is something that people just enjoy and actually embrace all the time. And so whatever we can do to capitalize on the benefits of being in a classroom with peers or so on and so forth, or whatever the learning situation is, to make the learning even better, that's fantastic, right? But these pedagogical models that we've known about for years really haven't penetrated, and all of you, I'm sure, know that. We still see people teaching, and we still see students learning, and we still see classrooms being constructed pretty much the same way that it's been done for the last 50 years. And that video Mark alluded to in the beginning kind of captures that disconnect where, you know, people often joke that someone could come from out of time and plunk down, you know, 60 years later and they would be completely at home in a typical classroom. And that's just absolutely true. And so open education offers the potential, in our eyes, to be what we would call a positive disruptive or positive destabilizing force to these kind of deeply entrenched systems of education. And we're hopeful that as people see the benefits and get excited about it, that it will actually promote these much more interesting participatory models of learning. And then finally, for us, we really see this whole effort as a method of empowerment. People who are engaged in education are there because they really believe that they're offering something of value to the people who are there to learn something. There's all these expectations that we place on them, particularly teachers, but also with learners about, you know, here's what it means to teach, here's what it means to learn, et cetera, et cetera. And they're actually given very little power, in my opinion, to engage as sort of thoughtful, I think of as almost as scientists in their own teaching, in the success of their own learning, and to make adjustments as necessary. And for us to then recognize, right, that part of who they are and what it is that they do. And I think the open educational model, open source development models, because of the emphasis on formative feedback, on iteration, on basically, you know, the only person who ultimately can learn something is the learner, him or herself, right? You can't force someone to know something. And sort of creating a system where we allow experimentation and we allow people to pursue in the way they believe is best in a very open, transparent, participatory way is very exciting to me. And I think that's sort of all fits into this broad picture. So I think this kind of repeats on what I said. We embrace some of these overarching principles for engaged pedagogies. As I said, these are not new, but become almost inevitable in a positive way when we embrace open licensing, open technology, open collaboration, open pedagogies, those sorts of things. crucial considerations for us on any item that is developed as a part of this course, or really any other thing that we think about as we start to consider what is this world of open education that we're trying to facilitate and enable other people to help build. One is this emphasis on constant formative feedback. Assessment is sort of a dirty word in so much of the world because of the way that it tends to be attached to what we would call summative assessment, right? There's a high stakes. You either know it or you don't, and that has some major impact on your ability to move on. Assessment should not work that way, right? Assessment should be this constant, formative, useful thing where people want to be assessed because that's how you know whether you actually know anything or not and can then adjust accordingly. And I think a lot of the pedagogical models, a lot of the tools we talk about, the open source development models, they all depend very fundamentally on that principle. We also emphasize education for skills and capacities as opposed to just straight knowledge. If anything is making it obvious why that's the way to go, the internet is. I mean, these days, you know, you can look up just about anything in about 3 seconds flat. And so basically trying to stick sort of abridged versions of encyclopedias into everybody's heads is not a particularly useful exercise. Instead, we want people to be savvy about the sources of their information. Sorry. Philip, are you popping in?
Yes.
I'm almost done.
I've been trying to do that. Okay, I'm just giving you the 1 minute warning.
Thank you. And, you know, get people to sort of embrace this notion that we can educate people to be skilled learners. And then we want to leverage all available human and material capital. So that's the collaboration. That's the virtual nature of, you know, we can reach into new peer groups and so on much more effectively than we have in the past. And then we want to consider all the building blocks of participatory learning. And that's really where this course kind of comes, you know, directly to the forefront, right? That we should be thinking about the open source models. We should be thinking about the pedagogy. We should be thinking about the legal framework, the technological framework, all at the same time. If we're not doing that, then we're building piecemeal things, which isn't a bad thing per se, but at the same time suggests that we may be making a lot of work for ourselves down the road, which is unnecessary. I think, yeah, that's it for me. Oh, and I'm looking forward to this, so thank you all for participating. This should be an interesting time.
Thanks, Aras. That was great. We've got about 15 minutes left, and we have a lot of stuff and logistics to still get through, which is a bit more about the actually what the next 6 weeks are going to look like, who's going to come speak with us, how we can collaborate, what are the tools we're using. We'll race through this because I want to get to the discussion about the blueprints at the end. But the good thing is that this kind of discussion, that the things I'm talking about, are also fairly easy to carry on by email. So we can move some of this into the email group after the session. So let me just run you through the breakdown of the course over the next 6 weeks. We've split it according to the three main building blocks that Mark spoke about earlier, the content and licensing, the technology, and the open pedagogy. And next week, so we're having the intro session today, we're hoping to iron out all those little technology issues that we've been experiencing for next week. Because next week, we're going to have a very packed and incredible session where Ara is going to speak about OER, Open Educational Resources, in a little more detail. And then we're going to have four people join us. And these four people are speaking about the projects that they've been running. And those projects really are some of the most innovative and exciting things happening in open education today. Jim Groom is speaking about a WordPress multi-user installation at his university. David Wiley is speaking about the introduction to open education course, both the previous version at Utah State University and the recent version, which is he set up as a game. And then Wayne McIntosh is speaking about the Learning for Content project, which is a Wiki Educator initiative. And Dave Humphrey, who was going to join us today, and unfortunately couldn't get the system up, is going to speak about the Seneca course that Mark already mentioned. So next week is really going to be packed with examples and stories and people sharing experience. And to prepare ourselves for that, we've compiled quite a lot of background readings already on the wiki, and there's one interview, and there'll be the other three will come tomorrow. So you can actually listen to 20-minute interviews with all of these people where they will give you the basic background. The week after is our first open text session, and we will be looking at some of those applications that everyone is using in education, like learning management systems, seminar platforms like the one we're using here, email systems, mailing lists, online collaboration systems. And then take those applications and break them down into the technologies that actually make them work. And as we look at those technologies, we're asking ourselves, what is an open technology? What's a closed technology? Why is that an important decision to make? And how can we as educators make those decisions in a way that you know, ensure that our courses can run, but also our long-term goals of sharing knowledge will be supported? The session and in between the technology sessions, we've put a session in there on licensing, which, if all goes well, we will be playing cards because someone has been developing a card game that explains the licensing issues very well, and he's promised that he'll try to get a better version of that ready for the course. But the person that's coming to speak about licensing is Lila Bailey. She's the counsel of CC Learn, who works with IRAS, and she's going to give us a breakdown of some of those options that exist in licensing and speak about the law to some degree and some of those issues around licensing and education and how to navigate them. Then we'll go back to another technology session, and this is more of the cutting edge stuff that's happening at the moment out there. There'll be two people from Mozilla Labs, which is the innovation group within Mozilla. And here we're going to flip it around. We're going to look at technologies first, some of those underlying things that the labs people are working on, and then have them tell us about some of the applications they think will be possible in 6 or 12 months based on those new technologies. And there's some really exciting stuff. I don't understand half of it, and so that's one of the sessions that I'm really looking forward to have these guys who are working on that stuff every day explain to us how we could use that a year from now. And then the sixth session is the Open Pedagogy Roundtable, where we will come back to some of the issues that the case studies will bring out already next week, but we'll focus more strongly on the purely pedagogical or educational angle. So we will not be speaking a lot about technology or licensing, but we will speak a lot about assessment, and I saw in the discussion a lot of people already mentioned an interest there. We'll speak about things like accreditation, about working with students inside an institution and students outside an institution. And we have three exciting people joining us there. One is George Siemens, who ran a massive online course with thousands of participants, and he's going to tell us about that experience. Jason B. Jones teaches cyberpunk literature courses using wikis, and he's going to speak about that. And then David Wiley is going to come back for a second appearance and speak about accreditation and certification of students who are not in your institution. And through all of this, let me turn on this. There's this blueprinting thing here on the right hand side. I'm going to speak more about what that means in a second. So how does it work? How does this course work? It's organized like a glass house, so everyone can look in. All the materials are openly licensed. All the sessions will be recorded. The wiki is publicly accessible. Our Deagle group bookmarks, everyone has access to those. So the whole world can look in. But there are certain things that are reserved for the people who are participants, like these seminars. And the reason why we decided to do it that way is we want to make sure that people start to learn about each other's interests, start to work on projects together, and also that you have access to some of the people that are coming for these seminars and actually get the chance to ask them questions, and they can respond to your questions. If we had 200 people in the seminar, that would be very difficult. So to some degree, we're reducing the level of interactivity that people who are not part of the course can have. Every week we'll have a seminar like this one, except it won't exactly be like this one. It'll be more focused on one particular issue, a particular skill. We'll have people speaking about that particular skill. This one was really more of a background and introduction seminar. We've got our discussion group, which will be the main method of communication. A lot of the presenters are subscribed to the group. and they've committed to answering questions. And I've also offered the ones that are that said they're going to be a little too busy to participate on a daily basis. I've offered them to Lee. So if there's a question where we need input from Wayne McIntosh, I'll make sure that he comes and chimes in. So the discussions are a great way to get feedback from those people, but also to build a community. And I've seen that that's already happening. People are asking questions and answering, which is really great. Social bookmarking. We're using Digo or Daigo and Delicious. And it seems like the majority of the group is moving into the Digo system. And it's really just to share resources and also reading materials. And there's a number of predefined tags that you can use to point people to special resources that are relevant for week one or week two or week three. So use those tags that are predefined to make sure you put the things where you want them to be. And then every week we'll have a somewhat similar structure. We'll have a seminar at the end of the week. Throughout the week, we'll have some background materials that prepare us for that seminar so that we can make best use of the time that we have with those people that are coming to speak with us. And we'll also be speaking on the, we'll also be working on those blueprints, and I'll come to those now. So what is a blueprint? A blueprint is really a particular stage in this development process where it's a little more than an idea. It's not quite yet a prototype. Sometimes it could be a prototype. But it doesn't have to be. But it's something that we feel needs to lead to a real project. So people should have real projects in mind as they're working on those blueprints. And most of you have submitted individual ideas for some of those projects you want to work on. We've started grouping those into certain categories, and please review those. If you're not in the right category, put yourself into a different category or change the name of the category or create a new category. But the idea behind that was that in this course there are a number of very strong technical people and a number of people who are more on the front end side, or I don't remember what Melanie called it, but basically people who have more of a pedagogical approach to these things, who might not be so hands-on involved in the technology development. And the idea is really that bringing those people together and getting them interested in similar projects, maybe we can get that collaboration that someone already mentioned in the questions earlier of people who come from an education perspective and people who have the technical skills to start building the things but might not understand the educational side as much. So the idea is really to bring those people together and get them to work on projects together. And the other one is that we suspect that there'd be a number of common interests, and that is definitely the case. So please review those projects and see who you want to who you want to collaborate with. There's also the possibility that if you are not excited by any of the project ideas and would rather work on something that's happening in parallel to this course that the people like Mark, Frank, Aris, and I are involved in, then that's also a possibility. And the three things I briefly want to mention is the Mozilla Education Portal. There's an initiative that's trying to design that the next generation of that portal. What can Mozilla do with that? So they're looking for input. There's been a whole discussion about Firefox plugins already, which is something I'm very interested in as well, and I could link us to another group of people. So there's a lot of momentum in that space. So if people want to get involved with that, that's great. And the last one is the P2P University project that I'm involved in. I'm happy to tell you more about that or point you to the website if you find out more. So what are the next steps? First thing is decide on the groups. So go back to the participant page. I know some of you have done that. And see who you could work with and start talking to them and see if it makes sense to work with two or three people. And then the second one is start sketching. What I mean by that is I've put together a template on the wiki, and I've also created an example page there using our course here to show you how one could start building this template and this blueprint. And the points are really that, things will change, your ideas will change. They don't have to be perfect to put them up there. It's better to get those ideas out on paper so other people can chime in. Ideas are more important than details. a picture tells a thousand words. So if you can draw it on a napkin or a piece of paper and take a photograph and upload it, it'll help people understand what exactly you want to do. And just provide enough details so you can start building. As I said, there's a template on the wiki. You can put a page on the wiki if you want. You can use that template and create a new page. You can put it somewhere else if you want to keep it on your own website. But please do keep the link to that project page on your participant page on the Mozilla wiki so that we can all find those things. And the blueprints really are based around those three fundamental areas that the course is about: open content, open technology, open pedagogy. And in some projects, one will be more important than the other two, and others, all three, will be equally important. So they don't have to be handled in the same, you know, exact way. So I thought I'd just quickly run you through one example of an idea that was submitted. And I guess it was a little bit of luck that I chose the one on assignments, because there was a lot of discussion already in the Q&A thing on the right about assignments. A lot of people seem interested in that. And so I just want to explain how this idea is already, you can pick out the three areas. You can, there's an idea around open source software, about bookmarking and highlighting. So those are, say, technology bits and pieces. There's the whole main idea is assessment, so that's the pedagogical approach, is defining assessment criteria. How do you do that for those kind of assignments? A lot of people are trying to figure that out at the moment. And then there's obviously a content component here, because students are writing on blogs or other things, and you do have to think about the licensing of those materials if you're running that course within your institution, your institutional policy. So I happened to pick out this one example. From here on now, if you applied this to the template, it would be very easy to move this idea into the blueprinting stage. I had picked one other one, but I think we're running out of time, so I'd rather take a few more minutes at the end to discuss. But this is an interesting idea, because a lot of people, and including someone who's coming to speak to us next week, Jim Groom, are interested in this exact problem, that how can you bring distributed discussions that are happening on blogs back into one space so you can follow them in the same way that you can follow a threaded discussion on a discussion forum. And so, you know, if I think Hans posted this. If you want to keep working on this, I can definitely put you in touch with Jim Groom, who will be here next week, and he'll have some interesting things and pointers. Okay, I've really raced through this, so if anything is unclear, come back and ask on the mailing list. If people are still around, we can spend more time discussing and asking questions. That's fine. I think the other panelists are just seeing what they're saying. I'm also going to stick around for a little longer. And the other thing I forgot to mention is every week after the discussion there will be an email from me to everyone that explains all the things that are happening in the week that's starting now, so leading up to the next seminar. It'll point you to the things on the wiki that you need to look at, if there are new resources. It'll kind of recap some of the things we might have been discussing in the previous seminar and couldn't resolve. And so there'll always be this weekly status, next steps email to tie things together. But at this point, I'm going to have a look at if there are any questions here. I can also help. So Stephen says he can also help with contacting Jim Groom. They're working together on another project that's related to this discussion forum. Eleonora says, I like it. I hope she means the seminar today. Wendell, making scrapbook data available in a shared way would be awesome. I use the scrapbook add-on for assessing and linking items. Yeah, so that's more on assessment. It seems like there's a real community around assessment, so I would encourage people to have a discussion on the mailing list around that and then reorganize their participant profiles on the wiki to maybe form an assessment group, and then we can look at how to tie that into the Firefox plugin idea. At this point, I'm at the end of my slides, so if there are questions, please post them into that little question thing. I can see people are already speaking to each other. Steve, where the tags for weak materials and templates. So Stephen asks about where the tags for the weekly reading materials and the template. The template is on the wiki. I'm going to put the links in now. You'll see it in the week two session. There's a template and there's also an example template. The tags for tagging materials are in the Deagle group. If you join that Deagle group and you create a new bookmark, then it'll suggest some default tags. And I've just used week one or seminar one, I think week one, week two, week three, week four, week five, week six. So if you want to feed resources into those particular weeks, just tag them with that week tag. And on the wiki, I've posted all the RSS feeds for the particular collection of resources that are for that week. So you'll only get the week, if you use that link, you'll only get the week three resources or the week four resources. Marco or Frank, do you guys want to add something at this point? I don't see any questions coming in. Alec has to go. Okay, bye-bye.
Nope, I just, I'm happy everybody has been here. This is super exciting. And I guess an encouragement I would make, just selfishly because I think it's really cool, is if there are any of the more Mozilla or kind of tech-oriented people who wanted to team up with the assessment tool around that idea of an app, I think it's brilliant. But
This is Frank. I don't have anything to add except to thank everybody for their participation today. And I particularly encourage anyone who's interested in Mozilla education or related things to contact myself and Dave Humphrey. If you send me a message about it, please copy Dave on the email.
Okay, then. Everyone's starting to sign off. Yeah, I can see the comments coming in. Thank you all for participating and listening. It's very strange to be speaking into this void and there's nothing coming back, but we've done our best, and thanks for keeping with us in the Q&A window. I think that was the most low-key chat discussion I've ever participated in, and we've made it work. So thank you very much for that. Next week the chat will be working, and you'll be getting an email from me tomorrow.